What's up, man?
Cool. Are you guys as excited as I am?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Yeah,
I'm stoked, man. We haven't done one of these, I think, since March or April, right?
It's been a while.
Yeah, no, I'm excited, man. Something that, you know, we started a couple of years ago doing is actually turned into a thing. And we've had several people and comments and things of that nature of wanting us back for another season. Like, where's the new stuff? So here we are, man.
Oh, are we like officially starting?
Well, I don't know, man. You know, I mean, I don't, there's no time like the present, man. I mean, like, what you got here? Oh, what'd you get, man?
That is the new 75th edition, anniversary edition. It's a limited run they did. They basically went back and did the 62 pickups.
Okay.
So they're new pickups that mimic, you know, they're mock 62 pickups with a C-neck shape, which is like a off of their 59 model. Dude, it's awesome.
Well, people can't see what it is. Josh, tell them what you got, dude.
Oh, it's the new Fender 75th anniversary P-Bass. It's
there you go, P-Bass specifics. Yes.
Yeah, but yeah, bourbon burst, gold hardware. Ah, it's gorgeous.
And when did you pick this lovely thing up?
It came yesterday.
Nice, man.
So yeah.
Did our friends at that particular company help you out? Or
oh, no, not at all. I just went ahead and just did it on my own.
All right.
They're not making more of them. So I was like, screw it. I got to do it.
You cannot beat a Fender. I mean, those P-Basses, that's...
Makes me feel like, because I'm never going to get that one from Tony at the Sonic Ranch. So this may be the closest closest I get to a 62 P-Bass pickups, you know.
Yeah, that's why I bought that 61 reissue SG, because I'm never going to get the one that's at Sonic Ranch. Oh, man, I love it. Well, happy new gear day, man.
Yeah, no, that's going to be my new one out on the road.
Oh, wow. All right. Oh, so no, which one are you going to bring home then?
Oh, no, that one's staying out on the road too. You know, Cody, with this, this kind of will go right into this, because with this new record that we've got dropping 12th of November. So many of those are in standard tuning that I'm going to have two basses.
We might as well just rip right on into it, man. I'm so excited. And we'll talk about the reason for having another new bass on the road, and we'll get into that. But we might as well get this thing kickstarted. I'm extremely excited to be doing this again. I think just because I'm happy to be working in some way, shape, form, or fashion. But we're going to start season 3, episode 1 of A Couple In. My name is Cody Jinks. I am your host, along with my longtime right-hand man, bass player, co-host, producer extraordinaire, been together a long time, Joshua Thompson. Hey, buddy.
Hey, man.
Wow, man, that was really like a nice introduction.
Well, what's up, dude? I mean, I only have so many words I can use on this podcast, and I use a lot up there in the beginning. So,
okay,
you know, I had to keep it short.
All right, and then we'll take that. That's acceptable. And then out of Louisiana, somewhere around the Alexandria area, if I'm not mistaken. Am I mistaken, Bobby Keith?
No, sir.
You're right out there again with us. Starting this season 3, our friend, your friend, the guy that makes things happen, the guy that knows everybody, is a phone call away from the president. I'm pretty sure no more than 2 phone calls. Bobby Keith Kilgore.
Thank you, sir. How are you?
Man, I feel like our good buddy, Bobby Robinson. You know, when Bobby gets excited, he's like, I'm excited, man. I'm just excited. Yeah. You know, yeah. Like, and we've had Bobby on the show, but I'm excited, man. We've got some fun shows coming up, and we'll get into that at the end of this thing. But man, I'm happy, and we're going to do something a little different today. We might as well dive on into it. I don't want to take too much time, you know, lollygagging around. We don't have a guest today. We wanted to do something a little bit different. We are dropping a record, as Josh mentioned, called Mercy on November 12th. We're recording. It's about, I don't know, I think it's today's the 3rd. So this will come out in a week or so, real time. So right before the Mercy record actually comes out, this is what we got. We got for you a rundown, the artist's perspective, the from the songwriting to the recording process, which, like I said, Josh produces our records. So, you know, input from him, you know, which songs were really fun, which songs absolutely kicked our ass, how the songs came to be, you know, kind of like what we did, you know, Josh, whenever we did the Adobe Session Storyteller thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so, and I've talked to a couple of my friends today, because we had some really great co-writers that are some really great friends of ours on this record as well. But yeah, I'll tell you what, let's just dive right into it. This is a breakdown of the record Mercy coming out on November 12th. And right out of the chute was our first single, All It Cost Me Was Everything. Josh, I'll give you just kind of like, we'll go back and forth, man. I'll tell you how who wrote it and how the song came to be. And on this particular song, it was myself, Kendall Marvel, and Josh Morningstar. During COVID, we did a ton of Zoom writes, and that was something that was really weird to us. Normally, as writers, we meet together, you know, face-to-face and writing that way. But a lot of this record was written on Zoom, and this one was one. And really, the song is no matter what you do, you pay a price for it. And the music business, you kind of have to you have to have a pretty good FU mentality. A lot of times it's a tough business and everybody knows that. So we're not going to talk about that kind of stuff, but we wanted to be fun as well. You know, we didn't want it to be just, hey, look, I'm an asshole, but only because I have to be, you know, it's making a statement in terms of like, in, you know, and once you've kind of, I guess, so to speak, made it, you know, and as songwriters, that's really all you want to do is have people singing your songs. And Kendall and Josh are brilliant, but it's what you have to give up and how you have to act sometimes, but you're still going to do it. You know, what was your thought when you first heard that one? Did you think it was going to be a big one for the record? From a production aspect of it, was it easy? Did it kick your butt? What were you thinking on that one?
No, that was one of those that when I first heard it, you know, because you always send a good list of songs, and I kind of just, you know, go through and take mental notes on, you know, things that immediately stick out. And that was one that immediately stuck out. And I think very early when we got into that, we all kind of knew that this was going to be a pretty fun song to not only record, but it was going to come across really well live. And I think it's one of those that we kind of felt was just a classic. If we have our own classic sound, it's a classic Cody Jinx song, from the way that we play it. You know, getting a little gritty with it and, you know, a little swampy at times. You know, but, you know, that one was really, really fun to play because, you know, and record because everybody bought in. And I think we all had a pretty good goal, you know, in place at the beginning when we started that song.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about the word swampy for that. But yeah, there's definitely a swampy element to that song.
Yeah, and I, you know, I think the song lended itself to that, especially once we got in there and started hashing it out. It got there pretty quickly.
Yeah, cool, man. Yeah, that one was one of my favorites, I think, to record. The chorus to that one, just to me, that's one of my favorite. And I don't know if it sounds weird to say, you know, like, it's one of my favorite choruses on the record. It's certainly one of my favorite songs on the record, but that chorus is fun as hell to sing. And we've been doing that one live. Like I said, you know, that was the first single. But man, I've been having a blast of that song, and it's been so much fun watching people already singing along to it.
It's very sing-songy, you know, once you get to that chorus, you know, it's very catchy. And it's almost one of those, you can almost know, you know, by the time you get to the end, you're already singing along because it's, you know, you feel like you know where you're going to go.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, that's short and sweet, man. All It Cost Me was Everything. First track off the new record. First single we had, man. Digging playing that one live. Had good responses. Moving on. The second song. This one gave us fits when we were trying to come up with song sequence.
Yes.
It's Hurt You. That was myself, Ward Davis, Greg Jones, and Rebecca Jinks, my wife. We wrote this song in the studio. We were recording in two studios out at the Sonic Ranch, as we always do. And we were in a studio at the piano in the studio, the Big Blue Studio out there, which was new when we first got out there. And Greg and Ward came out. They flew out, and we were all in Big Blue one morning. We knew we were going to try to write something because, you know, Ward usually comes out whenever we're out in the studio, and I try to have songwriting buddies out there, you know, to see if we can tack on a couple more. And we were able to get Hurt You, and Hurt You was Ward's idea, and he sat down at the piano. And we got the basics for it, and then we kind of finished it on guitar. Hurt You was one of those ones where it obviously sounds like a kind of a relationship song. But after we released that one, people were saying, you know, we were like, what do you think this song's about? And people were given all kinds of very awesome and subjective answers. You know, that song could go anywhere.
No, it could. And what's really funny is, you know, you guys started on that, and Greg pulled me aside the next morning before we really got going and said, hey, come listen to this, you know, and Ward played it there on the piano for me. And this was before you guys got into your rewrite. So this was very, very early on. And they really didn't give me any kind of idea on what the song was about. Ward played the song. He said, what do you think? And I said, well, I feel like you're talking to your audience, like, By the end of the show, like, you're going to put out so much that you're going to hurt your crowd in a good way. You know, and that's what I took of the song. And they were like, oh, well, we didn't think of it that way. And, you know, by the time it came to its final, you know, what we're hearing now, it does lend itself more to thinking on the surface it's a relationship song. But some of the answers that you've seen have been, like, huh, okay. The one that I find most interesting is it's a big F you to the music industry, which I never thought about that at all, but I can see how people infer that. And I don't know if that's what you guys intended or not. I've really never talked to you about it.
Well, that was one of my favorites as well. Whenever we started seeing, you know, comments about what it was about, that was one that I personally hadn't considered. I really, you know, like I said, knowing it sounded kind of like a relationship song, but hadn't considered, you know, that thought process of the music business. But after I found out about that and, you know, talked with management about it and things of that nature, I was like, man, we could do a music video right there, and it could basically be about, you know, the music business. But it's a really subjective song. It's a mean son of a gun, but it's so much fun. You know, total rock and roll song. You know, it's just probably going to be one of my favorites to play. I can't wait to play it. I've been working on it.
Well, and I wanted to ask you, you know, because that one is really interesting. We were near the end of the session, and so we were trying to get things wrapped up. Interestingly enough, Eddie, who's our engineer and my co-producer, I rely on him for a ton of things. He actually said, hey, I'm just going to take this song. You wrap up whatever you need to wrap up. I'm going to go take care of this in Blue, which is what we called the other studio next to Adobe. And so I was a little apprehensive knowing that all I heard was these rock drums playing through the walls and going, holy crap, what the hell is going on over there? You know, what were you thinking as you were hearing that process go on?
Yes. It's like, dude, and I'll tell you what, man, it's funny. It kind of goes back to that thing of, you know, just being a honky tonk band. And that's really what we are. And, you know, you see the elements of that in songs like that. It's a rock and roll song with some really cool steel, and it's fun, you know, it's mean and it's fun. And at this point, you know, it's like, what did you think about it? You and me and Eddie have worked together so much now that even if it's maybe not what I think it might turn out to be, it's still going to be cool.
Yes.
You know, and I've learned to trust that, you know, and so that's fun, you know, for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, love that song. All right. Next song, Mercy. I wrote that with Adam Hood on my back porch. He and Ben Ratliff, the guy in the music business that does publishing and booking and all that kind of stuff, they came by the house last year during COVID, and we sat on the back porch and wrote that. And my wife made chicken fried steak that night, and I loved the phone call with talking with Adam, who is a deep South Alabama boy.
Oh, and I can listen to him to talk all day long.
He is just a lovely human being. And I called him and I said, "Hey man, you got the title track, dude. You know that song we wrote? It's called Mercy. It's on the back." He's like, "Yeah, man." And he goes, "Man, that's like the best news. Man, that just made my month, man. Like, wow. Man, I just remember coming over, man, and just, you know, we just had some chicken fried steak and, you know, just, wow, that's awesome, man. That's just great news." You know, that's my best Adam Hood impersonation, but I love making those phone calls, and we wrote a really cool song. But that song is almost tongue in cheek, Josh, because the song's talking about how hard it is on us, but you've got this girl at home that's raising the kids, and this is way tougher on her. You know, so it's you know, this running ragged sure as hell on me. Well, what the hell do you think it is on her? You know?
Oh, they got it, man. They got it.
Oh, I know that it's you understand, you know, and everybody that's in this. So we had a good time writing that song. But do you remember what I told everybody in the studio about that song? I said, we just got to go Randy Travis with it.
Absolutely. And we did. Every person was like, "Man, that sounds like that was some Randy Travis influence." I'm like, "Yes, absolutely. We completely ripped him off, and I have no problem saying that."
I told him,
but you imitate the best, you know, and I feel like that, you know, that's our responsibility putting out those types of songs.
Yes,
you know, to continue. You know, to continue the genre that we know and love and that we grew up with, it's still beautiful. And, you know, that one was a very easy song to record from my direction point of view, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely one of my favorites, man. Feeding the Flames.
Favorite song, dude.
That is your favorite song. Yeah.
Yes.
I remember you telling me that back in the studio. That's a cool song. I wrote that with Kendall Marvel and Josh Morningstar. And man, I think that, you know, that was one of those days we might just all woken up just being blah, and we just like needed to make ourselves feel pretty, you know. I mean, that's a sexy song, you know, and like we were writing during, you know, a time where we weren't even leaving our houses because, you know, some of the times, you know, people still didn't know what was going on, you know, out with the COVID and all that kind of stuff. And we were all spending a significant amount of time with our significant others. And you got to remember, like, it's like my dad always said, you always remember to take your girl out on a date or whatever. Just, you know, spend that alone time, stuff like that, you know, feed the flames and you know, that kind of stuff. So, man, we just wanted to write a sexy song.
You did. Honestly, I'm having a hard time remembering the process on that one. We were right in the middle, you know, just to maybe go back and let people kind of know in, you know, what our process is. You know, we generally will go in and go three, you know, we try to do three songs as a full band a day. And if we can do that, that's great. And if you'll remember, Cody, in about 4 days, we knocked out about 23 songs. As far as, you know, the meat and potatoes of all these songs. And so that's one of those that, you know, looking back at it, obviously, you know, am very proud of what we did, but the, you can get into the minutiae and just almost completely lose track of what you actually did in that moment. And to me, that's one of those that I really don't remember doing much of that song just because there was so much going on at that time. And that may be a cop-out answer, but
no, it's honest.
I mean, it really is.
It's an honest answer. No, I mean, hey, dude, I look back and a lot of it's a blur. You know, I mean, especially we had two studios going at the same time, two different projects going at the same time. It was a busy time, you know, I've been trying to remember as much as I can. But that song has had the people that I've let listen to it are like, wow, that's a cool song. So I've had some good feedback from that one.
And I do, you know, Bob Key said that was his favorite. I believe that's Katie, my wife's favorite song off this record.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think
yeah.
the ladies are going to love it.
I think they are too.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah. Oh, track number 5, I Don't Trust My Memories Anymore. Myself, Kendall Marvel, and Chris Shiflett of Foo Fighters fame, but also of his podcast Walking the Floor and his own solo country project. A very, very busy man, a very very cool guy that I owe another podcast to, because when I was on his podcast, I was a wreck. I was really hungover. We had just had to fire somebody and it was a mess. So anyway, having said all that, Kendall called me one day and said, "Hey, I'm writing with Chris Shiflett. Do you know him?" I said, "Yeah, man." I said, you know, I did his podcast, and you know, last time I saw him was in Nashville at a thing Paul Cawthon was hosting. And he's like, "Do you want to write?" And I said, "Sure." And we set up the Zoom thing, and it wasn't my idea. I want to say it was Chris's idea. And I can't remember offhand, but Kendall will make sure and let me know if it was his idea, I'm sure. But man, we knocked this one out relatively quickly, and it has become the second song off the record. We started playing live, and man, you talk about like some Vern Gosden kind of stuff. That's that one's, you know, I've had some different subjective responses from that one, like kind of people saying the Alzheimer thing.
Yeah.
You know, which is something that all of us, you know, deal with at one time or in one way. But I just remember recording the vocals of that song, just thinking, damn, the song is so deep and sad, and just enjoyed the process of laying the vocals down on that one.
No, this was another one of those that in your initial songs to me, when I first heard, I knew that it had to make the record. It's just a very emotional song. And like I said, it's something that everybody can relate to once you listen to it. And, you know, sonically, I thought it was, you know, the song spoke for itself the way that we needed to record it. It's about getting out of the way of the vocals and letting the instrumentation just help that sadness that I thought you really, really got to when you recorded it.
It's never easy to go in there and lay vocals down that you feel are worth a shit. That's never easy. It's not easy being in the studio doing that stuff, but it was one of the ones that I felt like, we may look back at the, and be like, dude, it took you 85 times to get it. I don't remember it being too big of an ass kicker. You know, I remember it just enjoying singing that one.
Yeah, no, you you did it. And I think it came across that way for sure.
Cool. All right. Song number 6. Like a Hurricane.
Ooh, buddy.
Man, tell you what, how topical, you know, with what's going on in the world today. I think this one's going to land at a really good time. Wrote this one with Josh Morningstar. Kind of a backstory to this one. My management, Arthur, and Josh were talking back and forth, and he basically was telling Josh, he said, Jinx needs this kind of song. And Morningstar is such a talent that, you know, he can write a song for anybody. And he told me it took him 11 times to get this song. It took him 11 tries to get what became this song. And he sends it to me. And all I really did was go in and work on the second verse and make it a bit more applicable to, you know, to what I was feeling exactly at that time. Man, what a monster.
Looking back at it, it's probably one of my favorites off of the record.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I hated it. But knowing we always have one like this on a record that kind of shows up out of nowhere and you're like, holy crap, this is great. We got to do something with it. But, you know, this one was a labor of love once we got in there. Usually I feel like those things that have been like that in the past have been like Loud and Heavy, which, you know, came together fairly quickly. I felt like we really had to work at this one. This has one of the funkiest bass parts I've ever put down on a song. You know, I think there's a lot of sound elements that are new that we haven't ever tried, for this song. And I think it's the most different out of the group. Like, this is the one where I feel like we kind of stretched our wings, you know, a little bit and, took some chances, which is really scary to do, as you know. I think because we took the chances, you know, I don't know if we're supposed to say this, but I believe this song's being picked up on a national radio level.
It is, from
what I understand.
We've had a lot of good response from radio on this one. And yeah, you know, like I said, what a good time to put a song like this out there. You know, whatever your hurricane is, or, you know, whatever it is you're going through, man, we're all going through something and everybody wants those peaceful waters, but you know, it ain't always that way.
And we know this is going to be a Morningstar song because Josh put all the words in there.
All of them. I talked to him a couple of days ago and I called him and told him about what we were just talking about the radio thing and that one getting picked up on a pretty big level. And he was just so tickled and he's such a sweet guy. And Josh, our love, man, we'll get back out there with him sooner or later. All right. Song number 7, How It Works. I wrote that one all by myself. Only song on the record that was just me. People may wonder, you know, why I don't write more by myself. Well, when you got people like we've been talking about, you know, to help you write songs, they usually turn out better. But this one I wrote after Rebecca and I had an argument last year, whenever we were trying to do a whole bunch of stuff from my house, which has like not very much internet at all because I live in the middle of nowhere. Rebecca was my IT person, and Rebecca and I working together is not really always an awesome thing. My wife is lovely and awesome and helped in every way she could last year, but I'm also not the easiest person to work with. So we get into an argument about internet and how to do whatever on Facebook Live. And she was like, we need to do it this way. And I was like, no, we need it this way. It was stupid. And we'd been together for months and months and months. And nobody can make me happier. Nobody can make me madder, you know, than the same person. And it's the same, you know, probably for most husbands and wives, I would imagine. So I wrote How It Works. It's a love song, and it really is, I guess, not to overuse the term, but it's a pretty sexy love song. I think it's another one that women are really going to like. And it has a really good jam to it. I actually wanted to send that song to somebody cool, like, Bruno Mars or The Weeknd, somebody like that. You know, management was like, no, you need to keep that. You need to cut that yourself. I tell you what I can remember about that song was having so much fun and Eddie telling Dave, that's the paint it black, you know, he's like, paint it black, Dave, the whole way, da, 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 you know, that was fun. But that steel solo in that song, I think, is probably the most insane thing I've ever heard.
Well, yeah, let's just jump to that because that was, I think we kind of finished our big group of getting everything together and then we were diving into, okay, overdubbing and starting to do some of the fun stuff. And that was one of the first things that got laid down just overall as an overdub, and it was Hot Rod putting that steel part down. And I really feel like that kind of set a tone. There's certain things that will happen in a session that can either bring it all the way down and almost shut the whole thing down. And there's things that will raise the energy to where it just keeps you going for 2 or 3 days. And I swear to God, we talked about that solo four or five days straight, and just like, hey, pull that solo back up just because we wanted to listen to it. And Hot Rod did such a great job on this record. I mean, all the guys did, and we should probably highlight them at some point in time, but this solo that Hot Rod did, I'm real excited for people to listen to, because it's just incredible.
It's insane. It's insane. And like you said, everybody did a great job, but just, that's the one thing about that song that sticks out. Not even like lyrically or vocally. Like, I love singing that song. I love playing it. It's going to be so much fun to play live. But yeah, it's that freaking solo. So there you go, Hot Rod.
That's all you get.
Yeah, that's all you get, buddy.
That's all you get.
Enjoy that, friend. Number 8, Nobody Knows How to Read.
All right. This is one you had to fight for, bud.
I had to fight for this song. And I was going to die on that hill. I was going to, that was a worthy cause for me. After How It Works, man, we just slammed on the brakes. I mean, just, and it's a song that I wrote with David Matzler from the Quaker City Nighthawks, who we've been friends with for, since their inception. And I grew up with Sam Anderson, also of Quaker City. I met Dave in February in Durango, Colorado. He's living up there now. He had moved from Fort Worth area up there, and my wife and I were going through Durango, and I called him up and I said, hey man, do you want to meet and have a beer? And it ended up being a couple of beers. We had about 30 minutes to sit there and talk. And we were talking about the state of affairs. You know, it was February. Everybody was still wearing masks. Nobody had vaccinations yet. And it was kind of like, man, do I give you a hug or not? Everybody's going, it's weird, you know? But we had a lovely conversation, and Dave's brilliant, brilliant, brilliant guy. A fantastic songwriter. And I think the line "Nobody knows how to read" was his, and he sent this really cool idea about this song. Man, I sent back a chorus idea, and we were, you know, off to the races. Well, you talk about topical. Man, right now, you know, in the nation of cancel culture and keyboard warriors and trolls and you know, if you're not left, you're wrong, and if you're not right, you're left. If you're not, you know, if you're not this, you're that. You know, it's cool to be different if you're the same kind of different as me. It's really the world we live in today. And man, I just love that song, and I would have died on that sword again.
Well, I'm glad you did, because it is a good song. It reminds me a lot of Pretty Packaging from years and years and years and years ago. I bet there may be 1,000 people that know that song. I think it's the thinking song. You know, it's the song that'll make you think on this record. I love the production value on it. It was a one take song for the band. We always seem to get one of those per record. And those are always exciting, but I really just love the production value on this. It's simple. It's an in and out song. You know, I think it's 2.5 minutes.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's very, very quick song.
There's nothing to it.
There's nothing to it. But I do think that, you know, in the course of this record, it's going to be a nice, just gives you time to just take a deep breath. If you're one of those that listens to records in succession, which I suggest that you do, because we do take a lot of time in the order of these songs, because that's the way I like to enjoy records. So,
yeah. And it was, like I said, it's the hardest song sequence I've ever had to do. And we really did. I drew a roller coaster, if you remember that. And
I do.
Number 9, Shoulders. That was me, Kendall, and Tennessee Jet. And it was one of those that we woke up and it was just a heavy day. And we had a song write scheduled. And that one was my idea. I said, guys, I was like, man, everything's heavy right now. You know, it was kind of at the height of the pandy, and everybody was bummed. And I said, you know, there's, could you imagine, you know, I've got a friend that's a firefighter in Dallas, and, you know, hearing him talk about what, you know, first responders were going through, police, fire, paramedics, you know, nurses, doctors, not only that, teachers, you know, that are having to, we're having to navigate through this, and a lot of, you know, a lot of people were affected by it. But Shoulders was talking about really those kind of those first responders, those people that, you know, take care of other people first, that if praying is your thing, or putting out, you know, positive energy, or just your positive thoughts, I think that that goes a long way. You know, I think that all that's energy. But yeah, those people were hard hit, you know, and that's really what that song was about.
Well, and that was a message that, that you continued to remind us of through the whole process of us recording. And it's something that I you felt very strongly about during the recording process of that, which is why I think this song made the record. Like I said, because you wanted people to know that you were thinking, not only thinking about them at that, in that time, you know, but now as well.
Yeah, that it was a heavy song, and we wrote a lot of heavy songs, and some of them, which didn't make the record, and a couple of them did. We wrote some fun songs too, but yeah, that was one of the serious ones that, you know, we were really thinking about those people that think about, you know, others before themselves first. Dying Isn't Cheap, the 10th song off of the Mercy record, was not on that one. I should have been. I was actually supposed to be on that right. That was Kendall Marvel and Josh Morningstar. And what happened was,
you're going to be so bitter about this.
I'm not. And I can tell you why, though.
Okay.
Because if I would have been on the song might not have come out that good. it might have been a completely different song that we didn't record. But the song turned out so damn good because those guys are just awesome. So I'm not bitter, because, like I said, it might have not been as good had I been on it. It might have been better. I don't know. I'm going to tell Kendall it would have been. But
because he would have told you it would have been better if he was on it.
He would have said the same thing. Dying Isn't Cheap. Man, you talk like, I'm going to cite Vern Gosden again. Wow, boy, everybody's seen that guy. You worked at bars. You worked, you know, we've been in bars our entire lives. We all know that guy. You know, I bartended for years, man. You know, that guy that sits at the bar and just every day, you know, what a sad, sad country song that I am proud to sing that my two friends wrote.
It's one of the most, when you listen to that song, and if you close your eyes, the way that the picture is painted at the beginning of that song, I mean, you can see it clear as day. It's the songwriting on that is, I think, is one of the strongest as far as imagery, the songs that I've heard in a really, really long time. And that's why, not only is the melody great, but that's what really drew me to that song and saying, hey, Cody, you know, I think we need to give this one a listen to.
Yeah.
And give this one a shot. This was one of those that there were, I'm really happy with the way that it turned out. This one was a little difficult, and only in the sense that I think that, you know, sometimes you can try to, you're like, okay, this is the direction of the song, and let's try to be a little creative. And sometimes you can get too creative. And we actually had to pull the reins back on ourselves on this song.
Yeah, because that one's, man, all about mental imagery. Just that guy sitting there at the bar, man.
Absolutely, but I'm really, really happy with the way that that we find our final product on this is I'm very pleased with.
Yeah, me too. And that was another one of those that was, it was really fun to sing those old traditional sounding sad old country songs, man. Yeah. I love singing them. I'm always gonna love singing them. You know, number 11, Roll, A Breath of Fresh Air. It's you know, we wrote that one in studio too. That was me and Ward Davis and Greg Jones. And Ward Davis sat down at the piano and started playing this one. And we finished that one at the piano as well. Self-explanatory, you know, it's talking about losing stuff. It's talking about rolling with the punches, going with the flow, which is easier said than done, because real life is real life. But this is definitely one of those that right about the time, you know, the weather starts cooling down in the fall time or warming up in the springtime, whatever time of year it is, we're like roll down the windows kind of song. I love the imagery of that song, you know?
I don't feel like we've done lighthearted is not the word, but that's the only word I can come up with right now. But it just sounds fun, and you want to snap your fingers and, you know, do a little dance.
Like a little happy dance. You just got to roll, like put your arm, you know, wave your hands in the air, you know?
Like you just don't care. Yeah.
And I don't,
we don't do enough of those songs. But I think this is going to be really, really fun. It's not in our kind of initial group of songs that we're going to try out live, but I have a feeling that one's going to be requested.
One we might have to work up at some point.
That we might have to work. I have a sneaky feeling about that. Yeah.
I hope you're right, man. I hope that we have several of those on here. All right, roll. That one was so much fun. Singing that one was fun. Singing most of these was fun, but I remember that one specifically. That was one of the last ones we did as well.
Yeah,
you know, it was. Ward and Greg had come in. And number 12, last song. It's funny, man. It's just a funny song, and I'm glad we put it on there. And, you know, the song's not celebrating being a slobbering drunk, but, you know, it's...
Didn't say the name of the song.
Yeah, so I thought it was last song.
It is. It's when the whiskey calls the shots.
There you go.
I haven't even had any whiskey. When the whiskey calls the shots, man. When the whiskey calls the shots. Again, me and Kendall Marvel. Man, I tell you what. I think that was Kendall's idea. And that was one of those that we just wanted to make ourselves laugh that day. I think we probably just wanted to sit down and write a fun song. And to be honest with you, I didn't even think that was one of the songs that was going to make the record. But after we got in there and you and Eddie came up with that little groove and everybody was like, ban it, ban it, ban it, ban it. You know, that guitar part, you know, it's just a damn fun song, man.
This song could have gotten really cheesy really quick. And I knew the only way that it was going to make the record and the way that I approach all, you know, Cody, like I said, he comes with a huge list of songs and this list was bigger than normal. But the way that I look at everything, until I'm told otherwise, it's my job to make everything compete to be on the record. And so I knew from a production standpoint, we really had to make this one pretty unique. I think we did. It's honky tonk, but it's also got a little funk to it as well. And I think it's different. And I think it's really gonna be fun. I really do. And I hope it's one of those that people put on their party playlists and whatnot on Saturday nights, because I think it's going to get people moving on the floor.
Yeah, you could do this. You could do it all day too.
Oh, you could?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, he's citing lyrics there. I could do this all day. The ending of that song was probably one. And it's such a cool song to end the record on. And man, I can't wait to play this one live. It's fun. It's just fun. It's funny. It's lighthearted. It's a good way to end an otherwise fairly heavy record, you know, as far as subject matter goes. I think placing Roll right before When the Whiskey Calls the Shots, after one of the saddest songs on the record, you know, I think that the last two songs really help you go, that was fun, you know, like, because at the end of the roller coaster, you want to be happy.
You do.
And, you know, you want to go up and get the shit scared out of you. And then you want to go down and get that sinking feeling in your stomach. And then you want to level off for kind of a smooth ride for a minute. And then you take another big hill. And then, you know, but by the end of it, you go, holy shit, that was fun.
Yeah. You never want to slit your wrist at the end of a record. But leave that for the middle.
Oh, man. All right. That was it, guys. That's all we got for this first episode, season 3, kicking it off. We're keeping this simple today.
So let's real quick, what are you looking forward most about this release coming up for you, Cody?
The relief of finally getting it out there. You know, and we really didn't. It didn't take that long from we started recording May 1st, and we recorded the whole month of May of 21. And I really enjoyed making this record, and that hasn't always been the case. But what I'm most looking forward to, I think, is the same thing with all of the records, and it's it's just getting the damn thing out there, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, exhale.
Yeah, just a big exhale. I'm already writing for another record. But on your end, you know, what's the thing that you're most looking forward to?
I want to hear what people think about it. So I'm always excited to hear, you know, the excitement, seeing, you know, knowing that it's coming up very soon, seeing people excited about it. And maybe I'm a sucker, maybe I shouldn't, but, you know, seeing the reviews and seeing what people have to say about it, because I do feel like I can learn from some of those things, whether it's critiques or whatnot. But that's really what I look forward to, is getting to see the response and the things that we've done. Hopefully it turning out to be what we think it should be and what we think it's going to be.
Yeah. Well put. What are you most excited about, Bobby Keith?
Oh man, I just want to hear that Feeding the Flames, you know. Like, I mean, I listened to it, but no, I'm excited for you guys, man. I think I can't wait to hear the feedback, because I know it's gonna be good. I know, man. This is a good one. And I'm excited for people to hear it. And I think, you know, that first show in Milwaukee, you know, 30 minutes after you walk off stage, it's looking like the schedule, that record will be out.
Yeah, that's true. And thank you for bringing that up, Keith. Yeah, we're headed up to Milwaukee and then down, I think, to St. Louis, right about the time this podcast should come out. So it'll be new record release time. I'm just excited to have it out. I'm glad it's coming out as soon as it is. Don't want to wait too much longer than November to actually drop a record. You definitely don't want to drop in December and January for those folks out there that don't know, that will kill your record. But yeah, man, I'm super excited about it. It's honestly, it's been one of my favorites to make for several different reasons, but, you know, thank you to, you know, the band, itself. Couldn't ask for a better group of guys.
I was going to say that the guys that, you know, it's the same guys, but we should say they're, you know, Dave on drums, Dave Colvin and Hot Rod there on the steel, with Chris Clarity on a guitar, Drew Herrickel, who is just a jack of all trades, does keys and acoustic. A producer is only as good as his, you know, the guys that are playing on the record, and those guys are the best, and I wouldn't want to do it with anyone else. Oh, also, and Jake Lettner was a little bit on that that record as well, who's playing with us now. So
who has now become a part of our part of our live band. Yeah. So
absolutely.
It's just, you know, it's fun for me to, you know, for it to be the same guys, and it doesn't go without saying, because it should be said, you know, a lot of times the Nashville thing, the country music thing, you know, just in general, it's just session guys. But I don't even think about saying that anymore, just because it's our band. It's the same guys it's always been. And, love and cherish all you guys for helping us make records and, you know, and I don't even say my band. I always say our band, because,
yeah,
you know, when we're up there, I'm just the singer in the band, really, you know.
I say my guys.
Yeah. That's my guys. That's our guys. Yeah. But this has been fun. Thank you guys for joining us on the beginning of the third season of A Couple In. Cody Jinks, Josh Thompson, and Bobby Keith Kilgore, Seth Knows Worthy, out Nashville way, turning the knobs. I've been waiting months to say that again. And we will be hitting the road here. Well, we'll be leaving here in a few days to head out to Nashville to start rehearsing this new record.
Yes. So, yeah. So because contrary to belief, you have to go and relearn everything because you do not remember once you leave that studio.
I have been working feverishly at home, playing each of the new songs that I know that we're playing at least two or three times a day, trying to get familiar with them. All right, man, that was fun. Thank you, boys. And November 12th, all the social media outlets, Cody Jinks on Facebook, CodyJinks.com, CodyJinksFamClub.com, all of the things. You will get it on iTunes, and you will find it all the other places. So until we see you again, or you hear from us again, be it on the podcast or on the stage. You have been a couple in with Cody Jinks, and we'll see you next time.